somewhere. It has to start sometime. What better place than here? What better time than now?
Welcome to Banned Books Conversations, where radical readers discuss prohibited prose. I'm your host, Tanya Todd. Banned books are literary works that have been removed from a library shelf or school curriculum. Over the course of Banned Books Week, this series will cover 7 different books, the reasons they were banned, and the value in reading them. Today's book is The Absolutely True Diary of a Part-Time Indian by Sherman Alexie. And what we're doing isn't so much a book review as it is a conversation about The Absolutely True Diary of a Part-Time Indian as a banned book. But before we get to that, let's meet our radical readers. Amanda, please tell us a bit about yourself and what you do.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much, Tanya, for having me. I think this is such a fun and important conversation to be having. My name is Amanda Skinnendore. I live in Las Vegas, Nevada. I'm a registered nurse and a historical fiction author.
And Rochelle?
Hi, I'm Rochelle. I write under R.L. Merrill. I have been an educator for 27 years at multiple places. I'm so excited to talk about this. I miss doing my yearly banned books, huge display in my classroom. I'm on leave right now, so I'll have to miss it this year. Maybe I'll do one in my front window. I write contemporary paranormal, supernatural suspense. I write straight pairings and queer books, and I'm just really excited to be here.
And Mary.
Hi, I'm Mary Morris, and I'm a recovering English teacher too. I was a professor at a community college for 12 years, and now I am a ghostwriter, and I write fiction, I write contemporary romance, I co-write urban fantasy and paranormal romance with my friend Jay Bull, and we are Phoebe Walker, and Mirror Witch is coming out in 2023 from City Owl Press, which we're very excited about. But I'm excited to be here too. I've missed talking about books and teaching community college, teaching, you know, adults, or at least adult shaped creatures. You get to talk about these books. You know, I have them read a YA book, and I don't have to worry about, you know, angry parents usually. So it's a different kind of thing. Like, I've always felt like I've had a lot of freedom in that. So no one challenged me when I taught this book, you know, but, you know, thinking about it and thinking about why people banned it, I'm really glad to be able to talk about it tonight.
What prompted you to participate in these conversations?
Is that for me?
Or it's for any of you, but we'll start with you.
Okay. When you, since we're friends on Twitter, and since I saw your call, you know, for ideas for banned books, and seeing all the things in the list and remembering all the times that I have railed against the banned book news, especially the most recent stuff. It's so important. And yeah, so that's why I'm here.
And all of that recent stuff that you're mentioning happened after we got the ball rolling on this, and it just,
right,
it's even more reason that we need to be doing this.
Absolutely.
It does feel like it's snowballing a little bit. Yeah. You know, who's to say if, you know, we look back in 10 years and that's still the case, but it feels like there's momentum in the wrong direction. And, you know, has been for a while, but I think that was certainly something that motivated me to want to be part of this, because I agree. I think it is important to have information available to people, have stories available to people, to prevent censorship. And so I was grateful when you reached out and asked if I wanted to participate.
How about you, Rochelle?
See, I should unmute myself. I have very mixed emotions about this book. It was one of my favorite books to teach. I absolutely adore it. However, it brings up the conversation of when an artist behaves badly, how do you handle their art from there? So when I saw that was one of the books on the list, not only is it one of my favorites that I'm very torn about keeping on that favorites list, I wanted to have a discussion with you all and see how you feel about it. Cause I think we all have different opinions. So, you know, it's whether it's music or a movie or at this point, any art that's created, again, how do you continue to love it when you know that the creator has misbehaved, has wronged other people?
So that brings us to our next question. Have you ever been offended by a book? And we'll start with you, Rochelle.
Offended by a book? I don't think so. I have had an experience judging literary contests as an indie author and as a hybrid author, where I've had to read books where I felt like the author either didn't do their research or has very limited, narrow viewpoint about something in the book that upset me. And then you have to kind of take yourself out of the equation and read the book for what it is, and then make sure that you express that in the conversation and discuss it with the, you know, organizers of the contest. So that's a little bit more anonymous way of, you know, handling a situation, but I can't think of anything that's offended me more just like, wow, I really wish this person would have, you know, actually talked to a person who went through this.
Because clearly they didn't, right?
Right. And any of us could, or I would hope not, but any of us could be that author also, you know. We all want to write these stories that are important, that make people feel. And sometimes the temptation is to write something that's out of your experience. And so I think if you have the best intentions and do your research and you talk to people, have a sensitivity reader, that's wonderful. But sometimes you still get reviews that accuse you of doing something that doesn't make sense. And then you have to take that criticism as well and figure out, you know, do some soul searching about it.
How about you, Mary?
My take on this tends to be, look, I get offended by something. It doesn't mean other people will. So it's more of a, I'll quit reading if a book angers me in certain ways. I'm difficult to offend. I suppose it'd be fairer to say that I've been more offended by authors than I've been offended by their books. For lots of reasons, including the one Rochelle brought up earlier. And for just the ideals that they espouse in their books, and how they do that. But that tiptoes into that place where who decides what's right and wrong for other people to read. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, I get offended by politics. I get offended by authors. Books are a different thing.
Yeah. And that's totally fair. Mm-hmm. How about you, Amanda?
I was thinking it over, and at first I had a small reaction, like, you know, I can't really recall something that I read and felt super offended by. Then I remembered Tanya and I are in a book club. Not too long ago, we read I, the Jury by Mickey Spillane.
That's exactly the one I was thinking.
I haven't read that.
And it was, you know, this is
not, unless not you want a lesson in what not to do when describing women.
Right. I think that helped me settle on what it is that offends me. I think it's when you present your female characters as sexual objects first and then people second. Mm-hmm. I have a hard time with that. But it's usually like a component of a book and not the entire storyline offended me, if that makes sense. So it's something that needles me. And often, like you, Mario, just put it down. If we're not reading it for book club, this isn't for me.
Right.
And I think it's good to learn what isn't for you. That doesn't mean you get to determine what isn't for someone else, though.
And that's an interesting example, too, because Mickey Spillane, when was that written?
47, I think, 48.
I do think so, it was in the 40s.
It was a long time ago.
Well, and that's one of the things about literature that's fascinating is, you know, to understand it, you think about the time frame it came from. You know, good literature classes or history classes too, you know, because the literature reflects time and the authorship like time and all that stuff. And back in the day, boy, Mickey Spillane was describing women in a way that men everywhere and women everywhere didn't mind so much. And of course, we read that now and it's like, oh my God. Like,
we're going to do an entire page on her breasts.
Well, and what's interesting is my daughter is 20 years old and third year college student. And there are a lot of things that we can't read or watch together because in her mind, it doesn't hold up. For me, I'm like, oh, but I love this. And so, and I get that feeling from a lot of young people. And I think we're going to see a shift that people in the next generation coming out of high school and college right now are not tolerant of things that step out of line. They will not accept the argument that, well, that's how it was back then, because they're like, well, it's wrong and I don't want to see it. So I don't think that they would be in favor of banning a book or censorship at all, but they definitely are not willing to overlook the alpha male or overlook the gay jokes that are so, I mean, if you watch something like Friends, the amount of homophobia on that show is just, but I watch it and I don't think about it until my kid says something. And then I'm like, oh, yeah, you're right. You know? So I think there's such a mind shift between folks that are coming up the next two generations and my generation. I'm going to be 50 this year. And I think there's going to be a lot of changes of what is accepted and, you know, people are more vocal now about, hey, this doesn't sit right with me.
And I think that's an important point that, you know, we're looking at something that was created years ago and going, ooh, that's cringy. But I'm sure there are things that we loved that people years from now are going to say, ooh, I don't know about that.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
just the
like
way
the early world... Beastie Boys.
Right. Like the early Beastie Boys.
Indeed. Indeed.
So my and next course, question,
we oh, talked about it as they're growing. That's how they grew.
Right. They acknowledged that their work was cringy in the beginning, though, that their topics were, their beats were still smashing, but
they grew up. Mickey Spillane was a grown ass man, though.
Right.
He was a grown ass man.
He should have known better.
There's no excuse.
Other than, you know, being a man of his time.
Even being a man in the 40s.
Yeah. So that brings us to, should we ever ban a book? Like, is there ever a valid reason to ban a book?
Well, I think to sort of that segue, Tanya, this idea, you know, he was a man of his time. I think we can learn something from that. You know, you mentioned Mary about this is, literature is often a history lesson too. And we don't want to forget that that was how people were treated in the 40s, not just women, but there were other terrible comments in the book about, you know, other groups of people, right? And so I think that this compulsion to ban things that, you know, maybe don't fit with our current understanding, like there is danger in that because we shouldn't forget what happened in the past and where people came from and that, you know, that experience shapes today. And if we discount it, then we're not, I think, apt to understand our current time as well as we could.
Go ahead, Mary.
Oh, go ahead. No, you go ahead.
I also was very affected recently by the attack on Salman Rushdie. I have not read the book, but I know that it had been banned in other countries and there were lots of folks who, and it bothers me that because of somebody's words that they've been living in fear their whole adult life, you know, and is it okay if you don't like what somebody writes that you can try to kill them? Like, I think it's not only that with a book like Absolute True Diary, where this is a matter of parents trying to control what kids are reading and learning about. But we try to control so many things in our society. And one of the most effective ways they think is to ban a book. I remember the Parents Music Resource Center and them putting labels on my record albums and making me have to go up to the counter and ask, can I please have Two Live Crew or whatever the album of the week was? And wow. You know,
that's the second time that book was mentioned or that album was mentioned.
That album, yeah, it is. It's a way of trying to control what children, and you know what happens when you do that, then the kids are just like, gimme, you know? So, and the same thing happened with Salman Rushdie's book is it was, you know, a huge bestseller for a long time. So I think that when you ban it, when you remove access, you make more demand for it. And so sometimes it backfires, I think, for the people who wanted to ban it. But I also just don't think that any one of us has a right to say what other people, you know, I might not like it. I might speak out against it, but I'm not the person to judge it. That's between you and whoever it is that you believe in.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, why people ban books, you know, that idea of control. I mean, people ban books because they don't want people reading what's in them, whatever that might be. So, you know, if you're, you know, and we've seen how that gets used, we've seen how that kind of power progresses. I mean, come on, we would, if without the, without, you know, Steve Gutenberg and movable printed type, we might all still be living in fiefdoms, you know? I mean, it's, you know, people don't want an educated public. They don't. And when I say people, I mean, capital T, them, you know, they don't want to. And parents are scared of their kids becoming smart. And I think in a lot of ways too, they're afraid of their kids becoming smarter than them in certain ways and learning more too fast.
Not too fast, but the goal should be for your kids to be just better than you at everything.
I would agree. But I see, and this also comes from the Midwest. I mean, I'm in Trump Central, and I taught liberal arts in the poorest county in Illinois. I'm not going to say the name of it, but no, they were an overwhelmingly red county. You know, I was teaching people whose entire families really thought that Trump was the right choice. So, I mean, God, you go into that kind of mentality and you're just like, what can I show them that's going to help in the future? Cause I'm not dumb enough to think I'm going to change anyone's mind today. But I got to plant the seed somehow and get them thinking, you know,
and letting them walk through it if they so choose.
Exactly. So opening that door. So, yeah. And I was lucky. I was never called out on anything. But I mean, I taught what I wanted. No one ever got on me. And that's a minor miracle.
I think a book can be that doorway, like you were mentioning, if someone, a kid or anyone, is living in a place where there isn't, they don't have the opportunity to have a great professor who's opening their mind, their eyes, the book can be that for them. And I think that's part of the danger of banning books when we then the worldview becomes so narrow, and there's great danger in that.
Absolutely.
Well, that transitions to our next question. And I want to start with you just to continue with that. In general, what do you think can be learned from reading a book with content that people find offensive or worthy of banning?
You know, there's so much that can be learned. I think on the one hand, you can learn about people and places and situations, ideas that are entirely different from your own. I also think sometimes banned books can be incredibly like validating of who you are. Like, I'm not alone in this. There is someone else out there that feels this way, that experiences something similar to what I'm experiencing. And in that way, a book can be a lifeline. And you know, thinking specifically about this book that we're going to talk about in a moment, Sherman Alexie's book, you can learn brilliant writing. You know, like there is literary value, there is, you know, scholastic value in some of these banned books as well,
and cultural value. Mm-hmm. I mean, come on, Sherman Alexie, I struggled a lot with what happened with him and the allegations that came out, because he's been one of my favorite authors for so long. Like, between him and Louise Erdrich, I mean, I feel like I've always kind of felt like I got a window into Native American life in the modern world that I never got from school, because I'm living 15 minutes from where I went to high school. I went nowhere without books. I never would have got that. You know,
priorities.
But yeah, no, that, yeah, with the, you know, getting a viewpoint from someone you would never have gotten a viewpoint from in any way, shape, or form, you know, getting to step into their world in some way. I mean, even if it's offensive, especially if it's offensive, you learn from that. It grows you. Your reaction to it, whether you love it or you hate it, or it makes you think, or it makes you, you know, cry or whatever. I mean, you become a new person in a way because of that, good or bad. So
are you representation? The fact that we've gone so long and so many people have not seen themselves in books. And I'm speaking from the queer perspective. I never knew that was an option, you know, when you're having those funny feelings when you're a teenager and you're like, but nobody around me is like that. I don't know anybody that's in a queer relationship. I just think queer is bad. Gay is like what everyone says at school when they want to put something down, you know, like the books that I started reading when I was teaching, I was like, oh my gosh, if I would have had a book like this as a teenager, like my life probably would have turned out a little different, you know, not that I'm not ridiculously happy with where I ended up, but you know, I didn't know that was an option, you know, until much, much later. And so, I think that how many kids have missed out on seeing themselves. I mean, this conversation comes up all the time with romance, like, you know, authors of color not being represented and readers not finding people that look like them or had their experiences. So I just think when you go around banning books, you cut people out of existence. You make it so that, oh, well, nobody looks like that. Nobody loves like that. You know, people who are disabled can't have a happy ever after. Like, that's just, they're in a wheelchair. That's just, they're terrible. I mean, I think when you start to ban stuff, then you cut people out of the conversation. And that's what bothers me the most.
And it makes people uncomfortable. Let's face it, you know, any narrative told from a perspective that's not the norm or considered to be the norm, whether we're talking, you know, whether it's queer, whether it's from an author of color or from a different culture or from fat, you know, fat positive, like that sort of thing. Books like that tend to talk about the differences between parts of society and people who live different kinds of lifestyles. And it just makes people uncomfortable. We're not supposed to talk about that.
Yeah. But when you get exposed to it in a great book, then that can change your whole life. And we've already mentioned that. So
absolutely.
And I'm okay with getting uncomfortable if it teaches me something, if I gain something on the other end of it. I don't want to just avoid discomfort and then never grow.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. But some people want that. They don't. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things about True Diary that always stands out to me is Junior's constantly thinking about, I know I'm hopping ahead, I'm sorry. Junior's constantly thinking about the differences between the white kids at Reardon and himself. Mm-hmm. You know, the differences between Indian culture and white culture. And you know, white people get weird about that. They're like, not so different. Dude, you are.
It's a luxury for you.
The fact that you don't recognize the differences shows just how different you are.
They don't see color, Tanya.
They have tons of this and this and this and this, friends, that they didn't notice were that.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right.
Well, let's talk about today's book. The Absolutely True Diary of a Part-Time Indian is a National Book Award recipient. Since its original publication in 2007, it's been challenged and or banned all but 1 year for profanity, sexual references, obscene, vulgar, and pornographic language, use of a derogatory term, racism, religious irreverence, and more recently, allegations of sexual misconduct by the author. So I want to start with you, Mary. How did you first hear about this book and what prompted you to read it?
I mentioned earlier that Sherman Alexie was an author I had read a lot of. And part of that came from that MFA, that long ago MFA I was in. One of my professors was a fiction writer who grew up in the same area as Sherman Alexie. He was white, but he grew up in the same area. And they had known each other in like school, and not that young, but they knew each other in college. And then when they started writing, they were like, oh, hey, you know. So he talked about Sherman Alexie because he had spent time with him. So it was one of those things where I was just like, oh, my teacher knows Sherman Alexie. I'm only 2 degrees away from Sherman Alexie. I've got to read all his books. And he was so good. His books were so good. And he seemed like such a cool guy, you know, like you watch interviews with him and he's just like, you know. So I had read mostly his short stories, though. And I had read Reservation Blues, and I had read The Lone Ranger and Tonto Fistfight in Heaven, and like just different stuff. Yes. And taught a lot of his stories. My students hated his short stories, by the way.
Hmm.
My white Midwestern kids were not ready for dream world unreliable narrators who were drunk most of the time, who were telling these impossibly tragic stories that were also funny. Like they did not know how to deal with that. So, but yeah, so when I started teaching a children's literature class, I finally got the chance to like really look into some YA and things like that. And Absolutely True Diary, I was like, oh yeah, I got to read it. Read it, put it on the list immediately. Because it was just, fell in love with it. The voice and Junior and the things and just the honesty and the writing. I mean, seriously, you were talking about literary value. It was like he leveled up. I mean, his writing has never been that accessible in a lot of ways, but this book is so accessible because Junior is accessible. It's impossible not to read it and smile and like him as a person and want him to succeed. And he does that without making him cutesy or anything. I mean, he's just Junior and he's great. So that's how I came to Absolutely True Diary.
How about you, Rochelle?
Like Mary, I read The Lone Ranger and Tonto in college. It was a comic literature class. And it was my favorite. I absolutely loved it. I read everything I could get my hands on. And then I came to Absolutely True Diary. At the time, I was, I was still in continuation school. Well, I was still working in continuation school when it came out. And then I started teaching independent study. And in our school district, which is predominantly people of color, at least 50 to 60% from Latinx descent. So, and some living in really, really poor conditions with we had so much gang activity for several of the years that I was working, including murders of students on campus and things like that. It was a really hard time. And so I read this book and I cried and I laughed and I cried and I laughed. It was he really dove deep for that experience of a young man. Like I felt like a kid was writing this book, right? And then I listened to the audiobook, which he narrates. And it just was so powerful. And my kids have read the book. Most of my students, I would recommend it to because there are so many parallels between life on the reservation and the life that my students were living. And when they saw this survivor, this kid who took his life in his hands and went to a different school to get a better experience, I'm like, you've done the same thing. You've come to independent study because you weren't going to graduate from your comprehensive school. You've been through a lot of difficult things, but you've taken your education in your hands because nobody else is supporting you. Most of the parents were out of the picture. And so they all really related to this book. you know, and just felt like, oh my gosh, like he's so, I've never had a student not like that book. I've never had a kid not finish it. And I, the audiobook I actually bought because I had a couple of kids who I kind of like reading. And so I was like, here, you know, I would let them listen to it on my, whatever, my computer or whatever with their headphones. I would sign into my Audible so that they could listen to it. And they just really, you know, they really connected. And it's really hard, or at least, you know, in that period of time, it's really hard to find books that boys and girls could connect to, because there's a lot for girls. And the boy, you know, the male written books, I had a lot. I had like John Green. They were like, yeah, it's white kids, you know, like, I don't know if I'm really gonna find anything that I can relate to in this. So Alexi was like the best choice. And God, and then I listened to You Don't Have to Say You Love Me, that his autobiography, and just laughed hysterically and then just bawled my eyes out. So he has that gift, and that's a great way of connecting reluctant readers to literature.
I am really learning that I am somehow blessed and connected to so many amazing people, and some of them are spectacular teachers. So thank you, Rochelle, for just being one of those people. Like, that's just awesome that you went to those efforts and you're like, hey, you don't want to read? Here you are. Listen, here's my Audible account. No excuses. Yeah. You will receive the input that you need.
We'll receive it until we get that like matrix, you know, the jab to the back of the head. Yeah. Download things. I wish we could. Then I might finish my TBR.
How about you, Amanda? How did you first learn about it? What was your reader reaction the first time you read it?
You know, I also started with Sherman Alexie's short stories. And I just was so struck, like his voice was so different than anything else I had read. And so raw and emotional and true and like shocking in such a good way, you know, to my kind of, I think probably, you know, to that point, rather narrow perception of what, you know, a writer could do. And so I loved it for that. And then we got the book, The Absolutely True Diary of a Part-Time Indian, from my mother-in-law. She actually, I'll just show you, she had Sherman Alexie sign it for my husband. He says, Stephen Skinador, a very native cop. My husband is Oneida, and he had been up at Untitletown in Green Bay. And so my mother-in-law got this for my husband. And it sat in our, you know,
where he gets his love of books, right?
Right, yeah. And, you know, Tanya, I mentioned we were in a book club, and we were going to read the book for our book club. And so I was sort of saving it for that. And then we ended up not choosing to do that book because this was right, you know, when the allegations of sexual misconduct were coming out. And we read Tommy Orange's book instead. But I, to be honest, I never went back to it. I had this sort of conflicted feeling, certainly not of that the books shouldn't be out there, but whether or not I wanted to consume them. And so I, this summer was the first time I ever read this book. And it was an incredible experience. And I wish that it had been published earlier, like maybe a decade and a half earlier, so that I could have read it when I was, you know, a young adult, or, you know, in high school or in junior high or something like that. And also, I think for my husband, I think having a book like this that speaks so much to the experience that he had, it would have just been so validating, I think.
Mm. Yeah, I had that same experience, Amanda, where, you know, we're part of the writing group. It's brought up as a potential book. You know, our writing group dissects books from an author's perspective. It's not just read and talk about it. It's like, we really dig in and think about it from an author's perspective about what was successful about this book. What do we think about the author's choices? Why do we think it was so successful in this area? Things like that. And so a few years ago, this book was recommended, and it really caused some dissension in the group. We ended up putting it to a vote and ultimately decided that as a writing group with a, you know, as a public figure writing group, we didn't want to promote the work of an author with sexual misconduct allegations. And when there are other authors we could, whose work we could promote and not have that issue. We weren't saying that no one could read it, but why back it? And that made sense to me. And I had some reservations about whether I should, you know, I heard it was just so wonderfully written and I still wanted to experience it without supporting him financially. You know, you can go to the library, you can get it that way. And I never did read it until this, because it was recommended by multiple people as part of the banned books thing. And I, you know what? This book has many different reasons that it was challenged and banned, but this reason specifically, I think we need to discuss. I think we need to have the conversation about what if the author has done something. And that is the reason that people don't want to support the work, or they want to make sure it's taken out of the public hands. So let's start with Mary. How does an author's conduct influence your decision to read their work?
I'm looking at my my notes here. Okay, so it's kind of like what you guys were talking about. I mean, sometimes it comes down to, okay, do I want to support this person's creative endeavors? And then sometimes, do I want to give them my money? All right. And
with our dollars.
I taught True Diary before I knew about the allegations. And if I had known, I wouldn't have chosen it. Because, you know, I loved the book. I felt like it was a perfect choice for my classroom for so many reasons. But, you know, there are a lot of YA authors out there telling necessary stories too. And they aren't committing those kinds of acts against other people. They aren't harming others. And so I would, if I'm going to have my school spend money to buy 15 copies of a book, right, I want that money to benefit someone I believe in supporting. But that's, you know, again, that's my choice. And it's one that I do try not to put onto others, because this comes up a lot. My sister-in-law is a big reader too. And we talk a lot about this. She and her household, as we talk about it, she and her household have decided that they are going to look at the art and not the artist, which, you know, and we have conversations about it and we've managed to keep our love for each other. But, you know, so I try not to judge other people for doing it, but it's hard. You know, I mean, on Twitter, I still, if someone follows me and they still have their Hogwarts house in their bio, I don't follow them back. So I guess I am still a little judgy when it comes to that. It's just like, come on. There's a certain amount of responsibility we have as consumers of creative works. You know, I just don't think you can ignore that and just say it's the art, not the artist. I just, it bothers me.
So. Yeah.
How about you, Amanda? You touched on it a little bit about this specific book, but in general, how does an author's conduct influence your decision of whether you read it, purchase it, promote it?
And I think that's sort of where, you know, it varies about how much I want to put behind it, right? So do I want to support it financially? And, you know, a lot of times I don't when I don't approve of their conduct. Or as in the case with our writers group, I didn't feel comfortable creating a platform for this author. But at the same time, I think we have to be able to exist in a way where we can hold two dissonant things in our heads or whatever at the same time, right? So we can understand, like with this book, that it is a beautiful work of fiction that has so much to offer, and also at the same exact time that this author has done things, you know, and admitted to, you know, them. He said that what these women said was true, that hurt people, right? And so how do we navigate that, right? And there's so much of that, especially when you go, you know, we've got millennia of literature and a lot of people whose lives do not hold up to scrutiny. And so it's a difficult thing that I will say I don't always know quite where to land or land in an exact way at the same time. It's sort of a situation by situation, and I'm evaluating, you know, how I feel about the author's conduct, how I feel about their work, and how I can balance wanting to expand my knowledge and my own thoughts, but also be protective of victims and to hold up people who are not out there hurting people.
Yeah,
definitely.
How about you, Rochelle? I know you've had a lot of thoughts on this topic.
Well, I think there's also something to it. Like, okay, I have a series of modern art prints, right? And one of them is a Pablo Picasso. And it's a great Pablo Picasso. Pablo Picasso was a piece of shit. I think we all know that. Toward women, especially. I still like looking at his art, you know? And so, you know, is there a dichotomy between that and me feeling gross every time I think about watching something Joss Whedon made? Mm. Like, mm-hmm. I do. And I know that's ironic because we've had the Buffy and Angel talks before, Tanya. Like, we've participated in that. And I still feel like I can talk about them and analyze them, but I can't help but feel betrayed by Joss Whedon. You know, I don't feel betrayed by Pablo Picasso because I didn't believe in him before, you know, like we always.
Right. It's not like he was upheld as a pillar of, you know, this is how a man should be. And look how he is a feminist, you know.
And then to do something like that. I mean, you know, someone like Louis C.K., who's, you know, no paragon, but I mean, you wanted to believe that they're just, you know, decent people. And then they do these things. And there's an element of betrayal to it, too. And I think I feel like that about J.K. Rowling, too. Just like, how can you be like that? How can you do that?
Yeah.
And that, I think that fuels at least some of mine. Because when you were talking, Amanda, it made a lot of sense, like a lot of what you were saying. And I'm like, yeah, I probably feel much more strongly about it when it's an artist I cared about, you know.
Because you feel hurt, right? Like it hurt you because you emotionally backed this person.
Yep.
And I feel like you have something to say on that, Rochelle.
I have too much to say. I was thinking of what you said about with Joss Whedon. Part of that is the way I look at that different is that was a team collective effort. Yes, he wrote the show. Yes, he, you know, produced. Right. But it's what we love about it is the story and those actors and their performance. So I kind of see that a little different because that's like cutting off your nose to spite your face, right? Like, you know, I'm not going to watch anything by him anymore because he's bad, but all the people that work to make it so wonderful, it's not just him, you know, right. I mean, you don't have Buffy without, you know, the actress, right? The part where this really got to me, this issue, definitely this book, this is the first time I think that an author, like I've experienced that over an author. Normally with an author, I will just quietly choose to not read it. Or if somebody asks me, have you read it? No, I'm not fond of whatever. Mm-hmm. Music, because music is my life, that has been the hardest part. You know, my playlists have gotten a lot of editing over the last few years, you know, like Marilyn Manson. Bye. Like I don't listen to Michael Jackson anymore, even though I grew up with him and he was one of my favorites. I can't separate the two anymore because the way I feel it is when what my kids are seeing me do. Are my kids seeing me go, well, but I love this song because I grew up with it or I used to dance to it. I don't, but I will never tell somebody, don't ever listen to them. Don't ever read this book. Don't ever, because it's everybody's personal choice, right? And so, right. Again, I don't think Sherman Alexie should be banned because he's had bad behavior. I wish we could put him, you know, in a cell and just kind of, why? You wrote this beautiful work. How could this monster be inside you? You know, but again, I Yeah, that's the hard. It is hard. It is hard because it's such a beautiful book and all of his work, and I want to be able to recommend it, but I don't. So, or if people ask me why, I will explain. And Tanya, I wanted to share with you and with anybody listening, if you want to know more, because we've talked around what he's been accused of, there's an article on NPR called "It Just Felt Very Wrong: Sherman Alexie's Accusers Go on the Record." So if you want to know more about what we're talking about, but not talking about, that's a good place to go. Yeah. So again,
you can say whatever you want to say. There's definitely no censorship here. And for you to say, "Oh, I have way too much to say on this," both you, Mary and Rochelle, telling me which, it was Mary giving me a list of suggestions. And then she has this side tangent about this specific book. And then Rochelle, when I'm asking you, you know, which of these books would you like to read? And you have this whole paragraph on why your issues with this book. I'm willing to read this or this or this or this. But this book, all of this, like, this is the one I need you on because you feel passionately about it already. I want the perspective of someone who is aware of why it's being banned. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we haven't even discussed the other things. There are plenty of reasons that it was being challenged and banned before this.
Right. Like, and I have a lot to say about that.
Right. Like, you know, there's a derogatory term, there's racism in it. Like, yes, that's what happens when you're an adolescent.
Masturbation comes up all the time.
Right. Yes. I want to ask, did that reading it, both those reading it for the first time and reading it a second, or, you know, reading it again, knowing what he was accused of, were you thinking about that when he is just talking about girls and women and sex and just the obsessiveness with the way he was talking about the way he thinks about women? Was it occurring to you while you were reading it? Because it definitely was for me. It was just like, in light of why he's in trouble, this feels a little ick.
Well, I'll just say I read this years ago and listened to it years ago. I didn't reread it before this. So I had the luxury of not having that going on in my mind. So I'm curious to hear what you say, because I just think boys, girls, sex, like, that's just
it felt accurate.
Yeah.
It just also felt like, but this is the reason, you know, it doesn't feel like this is fiction at all. When and I know it's that
harsher.
It's
harsher in hindsight. Yeah. It's harsher in hindsight. It is. And but you know, I was surprised at, you know, I always kind of remembered it as being a little more than it was, I think. You know, so I was kind of surprised when I was rereading it and thinking, oh, I thought there was like more of that. Like, I thought he's and things like that. I mean, but like, shit is the word that I think is in it the most. It's one of the like, and they talk about boners and stuff, but in a lot of ways,
a lot.
It's still,
but that's what boys that age think about a lot. Yeah.
Exactly. What are they gonna say? What are they gonna do? I mean, yeah. So no,
it'd be a lie if he wasn't thinking about boners, you know?
Right.
I would say, so one of the things, you know, I made a lot of little notes because I usually write in my books, but because he signed it, like, this is how I'm still kind of, and you know, I'm certain about how I feel. Like, I don't want to write in a book that he signed. Probably, I don't know. Right?
Like, I get it.
Yeah. But one of the things I had marked was one of the sections where he's talking about Penelope and how she is so beautiful and like how he likes to look at her and just like almost like a full page of how he likes to look at her. And there was, you know, earlier there had been that reference to him finding her when she was throwing up in the bathroom and about her being bulimic. And what frustrated me was Junior is very empathetic. He's very, like, he thinks beyond his years in so many different areas of the book. And that to me was the one issue that he did not. And it's not necessarily fair to say that Sherman and Alexie didn't either, but just this idea of let's not explore the fact that you're bullying.
It was brushed
but
aside.
I love to look at you, right? Like, it's a shame that you have to throw up to be as beautiful as I find you. And that didn't sit with me. And then, and then obviously in the larger context also felt, I just noticed it more, I think.
Yeah. Well, and there's that part where she's trying to talk to him and he's staring at her, you know, and there's that really hilarious line, you know, where he says she wanted to look at my life and I just wanted to look at her breasts or something like that, you know, where it's just like, absolutely. Like, he's a teenage boy. I mean, he's going to be looking at the boobs. I mean, it's just, and
that is one of the parts I'm referencing, Mary, because it's so honest. It's so honest, but at the same time, because of his allegations, you're just like,
because he never grew out of
that, Sherman. Apparently. Did you ever grow out of that?
Yeah.
So when you're 14, it's okay. You know, we're not okay. You know,
not okay, but you know, you're still learning how to control your emotions and your hormones, and you should at least be aware that it's not okay. And working toward controlling it. But by the time you're writing this book, you should have it under control.
Right.
So I think we've kind of covered this, but just, I want to ask specifically, how does an author's conduct that you disapprove of influence your choice to protect it against censorship? And I want to start with Mary, because you've also talked a bit about the Harry Potter universe. Like, I think this is something that is kind of important to you.
It is. Well, and I part of it is because I'm in the same boat with kids, you know, like my kids are getting older. And as they get older, I start thinking, you know, do I want to, what am I going to expose them to? And what am I going to let them see me consume? I mean, it's the same, it's exactly the same thing. So that's definitely part of it. And part of me is sad, because I feel, you know, again, I feel kind of like, you know, I should be able to share this. And, you know, that's kind of everything, right? I mean, people should be decent human beings and not want to hurt each other in general. And it just really sucks when someone whose work you admire turns out to be that kind of person, and do that. So I don't think that work should be censored because of an artist's actions outside of the work itself. But I do wonder how I'm going to respond when Hazel comes home from middle school one day with Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. And what am I going to say? And how am I going to handle that? And am I going to just let it happen? Because, you know.
And that is a book that really, really encourages kids to read. Mm-hmm. It has done so much just to improve literacy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can't tell you how many times one of the papers I would assign is a literacy narrative. It was always like a way to get my students who were coming out of high school to think about a book that they really did enjoy reading, you know, whether it was, you know, so I wanted them to write about finding a book that they really liked. And I cannot tell you how many times that book was a Harry Potter book. Mm-hmm. It just was. And I know my kids are going to want to read them. And if I were a banned books person, I assume I would try to stop them from reading it. But do I feel like I have the right to do that, even though I'm their parent? Because I really dislike the author's politics. And I think the answer to that is no. Talk to me in about 6 years when Hazel's, not six. My God, she's seven now. So probably 5 years, she'll be ready to bring that home. So,
well, give me a call and I'll talk you through it.
We'll talk you off the ledge.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
I think something that both Mary, you and Rochelle, you know, brought up was about this, that uncomfortability, right? Of like being an example to someone by reading these books or recommending them, but this idea of the discussion, right? And I would say I've read this, but, and then talk about, well, I'm conflicted because this, you know, in our case, this author has sexual misconduct allegations, for example. And I think that's why we can't ban books, right? Because not only then are we banning what's inside of the book, but then we're not having the conversations mm-hmm. about, you know, I feel uncomfortable with this because he did this and it hurt these people. And so, mm-hmm. so it gives us not only a way to talk about what's in the book, but a way to talk about the things that the author may have done. And those discussions are hugely important as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And actually I will say, just kind of thinking about this program, Tanya, has made me think more about that and about the importance of, you know, of those discussions, whether we're, you know, saying, okay, I don't like it because of the sexual misconduct allegations, or maybe you're someone who doesn't believe that you should talk about masturbation or boners or things like that. That can also be a conversation starter. You know, we've got a way. Do you know what I mean? Especially though, when you're thinking about having conversations with kids, like, mm-hmm. I just think maybe we shouldn't be afraid of the conversations, which is easier said than done. I'm not trying to say, but I think there's such benefit to the conversations around the why of the banning of the book as well.
And I have to admit, I struggled with this one because I am part of that writing group and I was on board with not supporting his work. It's like, I don't want to put our name with this mm-hmm. book. I don't want to say that we are pushing forward this author who has done something so horrible. And then now I'm putting my name with it. Mm-hmm. It's not just the writing group, but I think that the conversation is more important than my name. I think that the conversation is more important than censoring the author. Like, I think it's more important that we have these conversations, discuss why people would want to get rid of it, what mm-hmm. value there is in letting people read their work. Because I learned something from this. I'm so glad I read it. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad that I had to get over that discomfort, because you said, you know, it's uncomfortable. It is. And I was afraid, but I'm glad that I pushed myself to go beyond my safe zone to learn something about, and it's not like this is the first book I've ever read about people on a reservation, but there's more than one story. You know, you want to learn as much as you can about people who are different from you. And the value for me was I learned more. I learned more about the way Junior grew up. And I think I learned more about Sherman Alexie. And I do see some potential reasons why he may have gone astray. It's not acceptable. It doesn't excuse anything that he did. You're responsible for your own choices, but I can mm-hmm. definitely see how the river could flow that way.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. No, and I think the most important thing that when you're banning books and denying children access to these books, you are cutting off that conversation that is your job as a parent. You know, when you are a parent, it's important that you talk about things with your kids. I mean, obviously I'm not the perfect parent, and the whole time I was teaching, I realized how much I didn't know about raising kids when I had my own. But talking about Harry Potter and talking about the Twilight series, right? So J.K. Rowling and Stephanie Meyer have very different political viewpoints than I do, right? I can see parts of their ideology bleed into, you know, especially some of the stuff in Twilight, for sure. But those were times when I had conversations with my daughter and said, look, just know that this author, the other one, Ender's Game, perfect book to give to boys, right? Mm-hmm. And the author has some very problematic, you know, ideas, but those authors that I know of never physically injured another person, never, you know, so to me, that's a political discussion. That's a conversation that you have with your kids. Look, I would, you know, I enjoyed these books too, but you should know that the author has this opinion. How do you feel about this opinion? Yes, no, okay. Well, no, going into the book that some of that opinion may bleed into the story, and then think about how you feel about that. Like, that's really how I talked about it with my kids. You know, it was hard to keep my you know, about my own opinion. That's the hardest part, is having those conversations with kids and then trying to do it like you would with a classroom, which even then I probably sucked at that too. I was very open about how I felt about things. That's the biggest thing, is when you deny kids access to that. I mean, if your kid brought home, oh God, what's another crazy book? If your kid brought home a book that was about, you know, pro gang violence or whatever, it was like somebody's experience being in a gang and then letting their kids be in the gang or whatever. Like, your kid brings that home and you're like, oh my God, I can never get my kid to read anything. If they want to read this, should I let him? Should I not let him? And then you read it at the same time, so the two of you can have a conversation about it. There's ways to work around that. One of my favorite YA books that I used to give kids was Two Boys Kissing by David Levitan, that book has been on the list many times. And the story is about these two boys who, one of their classroom or one of their school friends, I can't remember if he committed suicide or if he was jumped. I think he was jumped because he wasn't dead. But these two boys who used to be partners and are not anymore, they decide that they're going to try to beat the world record for the longest kiss. And so they asked the school if they could do it in front of the school. They were allowed to do it in front of the school. And it was just such a powerful, powerful book. It was beautiful. I'm sure the kids that I recommended it to went home and had to have conversations with their parents, if they even talked to their parents, but we had conversations about it. Or, you know, another book was The Perks of Being a Wallflower. Perfect book to give kids in high school. Mm-hmm. And there is a strong thread about child sexual abuse. And how do you feel about that person that abused you, but you still love them? Like, it's such a powerful book. And, you know, I know it's been on the banned list too, but if you just read it with your kids and have a conversation and not be afraid of them knowing about the bad things in life, you're preparing them in ways that you know, are so important. My daughter, she has so many opinions, and she has, you know, talked to her friends, all would come to her and talk about things because I armed her with that knowledge, especially about sexuality and, you know, being safe as a young, you know, person with a uterus, like just so many conversations that you can have with your kids. And I know it's embarrassing and I know it's scary, but it builds trust between you and your kid, and you're less likely to have your kid not talk to you about things, you know, or at least if they don't talk to you about things, you know, you've given them information that they're going to need to make a decision and whether they choose to talk to you about it or not.
I think the key that we're getting here is the conversations. Yeah. These are door openers for conversations. Even what you were saying earlier, Mary, about the Joss Whedon stuff, the reasons that you and I were discussing it is because of the Comics in Motion season's greetings. They had this whole season of let's review every season of Buffy and every season of Angel. And they would have guests come on and talk about each season. And as they were doing this, more and more allegations were coming out about Joss Whedon. So when they began it, they were like, we're hearing some things, but we're trying to judge the art, not the artist. And as the series progressed, you could hear that their attitudes changed about him by the end of it. But they were still reflecting on the work, and they were addressing it, and they were opening up the conversation with their guests and in putting it out on the Comics in Motion feed. They're putting it out to their listeners, who can then have conversations like Mary and I were having because we were listening to it, you know? So because I think it's the key is conversation.
In light of the stuff that came out, it's impossible to watch season 4 of Angel and season 6 of Buffy without talking about that, because the way the characters were treated, the way Buffy, her character, was treated in season 6, we now know is probably a direct result of her clashes with Joss Whedon. So he humiliates her by putting her into this, you know, very messy, very ugly relationship with Spike. And same thing with Charisma Carpenter, you know, character assassination of Cordelia Chase. You know, there's a really
great. How dare you get pregnant and think you can act?
Yeah. Oh my. So that it becomes tied in. I was just talking to a friend of mine the other day. It was actually yesterday. Time has no meaning. but we were talking about,
it'll be the other day by the time this comes out.
that just makes it more true. But we were talking about Firefly, and the reason Firefly is so good is because it didn't go on long enough for him to fuck it up. I mean, truly, it didn't go on long enough for him to get angry about something and tear apart Wash and Zoe, because I mean, he had said before, there are no happy relationships in my stuff, you know, it only lasts for a certain amount of time. He would have, and of course we all know what happened to Wash in the end. So, now I'm not saying that was about the actor, but you know what I'm, anyway. Tangent over.
Yes. But it's all intertwined. We've talked about music that was created by artists that have been in trouble. We've talked about television series. We're talking about books. I mean, it's all part of the censorship conversation. And
yeah.
Once again, I have the perfect crew for this particular discussion. So as we wrap up, I'd like to hear why you recommend this book specifically. What do you hope people would gain from reading it? And we'll start with Rochelle.
Recommending it. That's a tough one. Let's put it this way. If somebody comes to me and says, hey, I want to read this book, what do you think about it? That's better than me actually taking it to somebody and saying, here, read this. If somebody came to me, I would tell them that it was one of the most important books I've ever read. It's incredibly insightful for young people to read. But you should know that this author has been accused of and has admitted to committing, abuse against other people and using his clout to ruin careers of women. And so going into the book, you may want to know that going into it and decide whether you want to read it. It does have some very powerful things that I've never found anyplace else. That's the hard part too, is it's a one of a kind book. I've never read another book like that. So I couldn't recommend it one way or the other. I would have to tell them, and my kids hate it when I do that. When I say, well, you could watch this, but you should know blah, 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 blah. Then they're like, oh, God. So yeah.
Mom, why do you have to ruin everything?
Exactly.
Because it's my job.
He's very sensitive. And he got to the point where he's like, I'm not watching Disney anymore. They kill all the parents in Disney movies, and I can't take that. And, so I had to tell him a lot of times, this book is really good, but you have to know that this, like giving him trigger warnings, and then he'd be like, nah, never mind, And so it's, yeah. So that's my job.
How about you, Mary?
I have not actually recommended it to anyone, but then again, I mean, aside from, my students before I knew, I think I've told you that I wouldn't have taught it anymore. And that's definitely the case. I would have taken it off the curriculum, but I think I would have mentioned it. And I think I would have brought it up as something like that. I didn't end up teaching that class again without that book. So I didn't get to do that, before I left academia, but, I will always come back to the honesty of the portrayal, which I know we've talked about a lot. I would also, urge people to, to think about why it's banned and why people don't want it to be read. And when you look at that, it's rarely about Alexei himself, but about the fact that there are curse words in it, and there's masturbation, and there's violence. I mean, the violence in the book is interesting too. I mean, a junior hits people and it works out for him, which I know it sends a weird message. It does. I mean, him, standing up for himself is a great moment, and you're glad when he punches that jerk at school. But at the same time, it's like it makes the jerk like him, and then suddenly they're hanging out and they're on the ball team together.
I think he does acknowledge that I was raised with violence, and so I faced it with violence and realized that's not how things are done here, and I didn't need to do that. However, it did work out for me, and the guy ended up being kind of a racist, but my friend, you know?
Well, and I know, but that's a gray area that I'm certain you have to walk, especially in that time in life. I mean, I don't know, but I can imagine, given my exposure to this book, you know, I can see his point of view. But like, you know, I think most of the allegations against it in terms of why it's challenged for content are bullshit. Yeah. But I mean, and so I would urge people to think about it in that term if, you know, they were going to read it, if they had a, you know, whatever. But I would also, you know, I think Rochelle's got the right way to, you know, just say, hey, this happened. If you want to, you know, go ahead and read the book, go into it with that in mind and consider who, you know, I mean, and supporting it. You know, are you going to be hurting someone by supporting this kind of book and this kind of author? Not the kind of book, but the kind of author. I think that's the thing, this kind of author. So that would be where I would come down. But yeah, I mean, when it comes to the writing, when it comes to the honesty, I mean, I just don't know that there is a better book of its type out there. Mm-hmm. So
there's no content in it that I think should be banned. There's nothing. If you took him, if it was written by somebody else who didn't have those allegations, absolutely no reason to ban this book. Those are all things you need to discuss with your students, and mm-hmm. all things that will make a reader question a lot about life. So without the author, if it was anybody else that wrote the book, you know, that didn't commit sexual abuse, then by all means, no reason for it to be on that. I'm sorry. Masturbation it happens. Like, everybody swears, and kids swear more than you do as an adult. And I mean, like, yeah, that's just the way it is.
If parents want an honest look into their kids' minds.
Yes. And what they're exposed to at school every day.
Even the goodiest two-shoe kid knows someone whose parent's an alcoholic. They know someone who's got an eating disorder, or who has, you know, who has trouble at home, or has drug overdose. And Jesus Christ, all the death in the book and all the tragic ways of that people die. I mean, good Lord, everything.
Well, especially after COVID, you know, there's so much mental break, you know, so many kids with mental health issues, and it's everywhere. Everyone is touched by it. So, you know, reading a book like this could really make them feel like I'm not alone, you know? So
it's gosh darn
it. Why did he have to do it?
No, because it's beautiful. The whole book is about love. Yes. It's about hope. Mm-hmm. It's about, you know, believing that things are going to work out.
So that should be your tagline for this show, Tanya, is we're angry. We're angry and we're going to tell you about it.
Yep. And that, yeah, it just sucks that so much of the book now, it's not invalidated, because the book is still there and it's still great, but it's so hard to hold up and support because of it.
Absolutely.
What do you have to add to that, Amanda?
I don't know that I have anything to add, only to echo that I think what is so special about this book is the voice, the honesty, and the hope, and that it is giving voice to a experience that has been silenced for so long. And so in that way, it's particularly important, I think. And I, you know, I agree with the other things. It is a difficult book, though, to hold up and to support. But I very much enjoyed just our little discussion here, because it's, you know, made me think about other things and helped me in this sort of, like, I feel like I'm walking a tightrope a little bit. And just to know that we're all trying to do that, you know, and having a little bit of, I think, compassion for other people and their choices, because, you know, it's difficult.
Yeah. That's life right there, right? Yeah. I mean, it's hard putting one foot in front of the other some days. And then you have to figure out how you feel about all this other stuff in life. Man, being an adult sucks, okay? I would much prefer to be completely overwhelmed by thoughts of masturbation and, and watching what's on MTV. I miss that.
Yeah. Back before, you know, the conversations we, and a lot of it is probably artists have been misbehaving forever, but now it's all out there, right? Everyone's business. But like, you know, me sitting there going, oh, you can't listen to Chris Brown anymore. He's a wife abuser. You can't listen to Marilyn Manson because he did this. And then going, but here, read this book. Like, you know, it really, like, it shows your, you know, your hypocrisy if you're out there doing that. So, mm-hmm. So now I have to be good and like responsible and shit and not just,
I have to be the good that I want to see in the world. What the fuck?
What's up with that?
I throw on me. Because every single choice is what we do. Thanks, Yoda. Yeah, that's
Well, thank you, ladies, for a fantastic conversation. I appreciate you all helping me put the act in activism. You've had just wonderful thoughts, and I'm so glad to have all of you here. Before we wrap up, I want to make sure you each get a chance to plug yourselves, tell people how they can find you and support your work. And we'll start with Mary.
I already snuck in a plug for my book.
All right. Do it again.
It's so much fun. It's called Mirror Witch, and it is a paranormal romance / urban fantasy set in St. Louis. And it is coming out from City Owl Press in spring of 2023. New things will be coming. So if you're interested in that sort of stuff, Phoebe Walker is on Twitter. That's our, that's my co-authors. I mean, that's our pen name. You can find her on Twitter. She's the only Phoebe Walker on Twitter that I know. And I am also on Twitter, Mary Morris. And you can find me at Mary Morris 3. And yeah, that's where you can find me. That's what I'm working on now. And I'm on sub with my book, my contemporary romance. So hopefully there'll be news for that soon. But if not, I'm just going to keep writing and keep enjoying it and keep believing in love, because love is awesome.
Don't stop believing.
Never stop believing. Hold on to that feeling.
How about you,
Thank
Rochelle?
Thank you so much for this. This has been great.
Where do you find me? I'm R.L. Merrill, author at most places. I have a new release coming out September 13th, which is a gay vampire romance called Sundowners. It's a little bit new for me, but it's definitely something that came out of the pandemic, so do with it what you will. And then I will have a funny, wacky paranormal out in October that is part of the Magic and Mayhem universe, which is created by Robin Peterman, and my book is called Five Fanger Witch Punch. That comes out October 31st. So September 13th, October 31st, rlmerrillauthor.com. And thank you guys. This has been great.
Yay.
I have to say, everything you guys, every word is like this buzzword for me, like paranormal romance, witch, vampire. I'm like, oh my God, I've got to get all of this. you have one new fan in the, at least. but you can find me online at Amanda Skinnador. I'm mostly active on Instagram, a little Facebook, and just obligatorily on Twitter. And my latest book is The Nurse's Secret, which came out just a few months ago, a work of historical fiction.
Well, that's it for today's conversation. If you enjoyed what you heard, please like, comment, and share. Thank you for listening, and more importantly, thank you for reading.
Black nationalist. He may be a real contender for this position should he abandon his supposed obedience to white liberal doctrine of not-